You're listening to the Screaming Pods Network.
Welcome to...
You're wasting my time. Sorry. I didn't mean to. This is still perfectly timed.
Oh, that was awesome. Should almost leave that in. Anyway, welcome to this episode of Just the Discs. My name is Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. I have, I think, my most returningest guest returning to the program, and that's Mr. Rob Hunter. Thank you for coming back, Rob.
Can I get that on a plaque?
Yes, absolutely. We have a very high plaque budget here at Just the Discs.
Excellent.
So it'll be gold embossed, you know, some diamonds. It'll be good stuff.
I'll take it.
And we'll fly it into you. So anyway, so this episode we are talking Olive Films signature discs. Olive Films had sort of a small drop off in production on their signature discs, and I was a little sad for a little while, but then they cranked out four at the end of 2017, and I just want to talk about these movies. And now, of the four we're going to talk about, Rob, how many of these had you seen before these discs?
I had seen three of them before.
Okay. We're going to talk about A New Leaf, Letter from an Unknown Woman, Operation Petticoat, and Father Goose. Now, which one hadn't you seen, just out of curiosity?
A New Leaf.
Oh, great. Okay. So let's start with that one.
Let's.
That is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Romeo and Juliet.
Bob and Bing.
Leopold and Love.
Eloise and Abelard.
Ulysses and Grant.
George and Martha.
Martha and John.
Bob and Carol.
Ted and Alice.
Bob and Alice.
Ted and Carol.
Bob
and Ted.
Carol and Alice.
Popeye.
And olive oil.
Maggie and Jigs.
Pat and Dick.
Julie and David.
Hugo and Joan.
John and Mary.
Byron and his sister.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Jane and Tarzan.
Bill and Coo.
Nip and Tuck.
Henry the Eighth.
And Anne and Jane. And Catherine and Catherine and Catherine.
John and Priscilla.
Liz and Eddie.
Liz and Mike.
Liz and Dick.
Dick and Sybil.
Sybil and Jordan.
Eddie and Debbie.
Thick and Thin. Muck and Meyer. Frick and Frack.
David and Goliath.
Mogan and David.
Frankie and Johnny.
Mama and the Me.
Hollywood and Vine.
Anthony and Cleopatra.
And now...
Henry and Henrietta.
The love couple of the 70s.
And the laugh riot of the year.
And I had the other Blu-ray, but I was really excited to see it get this deluxe.
I feel like you could have told me about this movie a long time ago. I mean,
it's my fault.
Been, you know, online buds for at least like 3 or 4 months now.
Yes.
I feel like I could have been informed about this a lot sooner if it was one of your favorite movies of all time. Instead, I had to wait and discover it, you know, just off of the Blu-ray.
I think it's much better discovered that way, personally.
No, I agree. Because I wouldn't have listened otherwise. I'm just like, eh.
Whatever. Meh. That guy. Yeah, so what did you... Well, let me just do my stupid spiel about what the movie's about. I mean, because it's basically Walter Matthau plays a guy named Henry Graham, who is a trust fund kid to the very end, to the point that he has had this trust fund his whole life, and he's actually set it up so that he is spending more than he should every month. So he runs his trust fund completely out and is forced to go and try and find a wife to try and... Because he doesn't want to work. That's the worst thing ever as far as he's concerned. So it's just sort of this very snobby guy trying to court women that, you know, he can take their fortune and maybe kill them. That's kind of part of the story this is based on anyway. What did you think of it, though?
I was utterly blown away by it. I mean, I've obviously been a huge Matthau fan for a long time, and I've been aware of Elaine May, but I hadn't really seen or at least recognized some of her work before. And so this movie, I sat down to watch the movie thinking, okay, you know, I'll check out this older movie. I hadn't really heard much about it. And I had to pause it like two or three times because I was just laughing too hard. And that's, I love laughing and I, you know, enjoy comedies and I laugh a lot at movies. Not always allowed though. It's oftentimes just kind of like, you know, giggles to myself or like knowing nods towards the screen. But this thing, I was like busting a gut laughing. The early scene with Matthau and the lawyer regarding his account. Oh my God. That thing just devastated me.
So good.
Now, listen to me very carefully, please. You see, when you have capital, you are able to derive... No, I will attend to the check in a moment, Mr. Graham. I understand about the check. I'm trying to explain something to you that is terribly important. When we spend more per month or per year than we have in income, you must then dip into the capital, eventually exhausting the capital and, of course, therefore, the income. Do you see what I mean?
Mr. Brickett, this check must be paid.
Mr. Graham, I'm trying to explain to you that it is impossible to pay the check because your expenses have exceeded your income to such a point that you have exhausted your capital. Now you have no capital, no income, therefore no funds for the check, you see.
Don't treat me as though I were a child, Mr. Beckett.
No, I'm not.
I am as aware of what it means to have no capital as you are.
Oh, good, good.
Now, what about this check?
Well, are you entirely sure that you really do understand what I mean by capital, Mr. Graham? You see, you've exhausted the capital. I can't cover the check because the check is for $6,000 and you don't have $6,000. In other words, you don't have $60.
Come to the point, Beckett.
The point, Mr. Graham, is that you don't have any money. The capital and the income are exhausted and you no longer have any money. I wish there was some other way I could say it. How could I put it? That money... You have no capital, you have no income, No, it's only money. You have no money. There's no other way to put it, you see.
You mean I have no money?
Yes, that's what I mean. You have no money.
But what of my stocks, my AT&T, my General Motors?
Yes, I know.
My Amarada Pete.
Yes, I know about Amarada Pete. Let me show you something, Mr. Graham. You see, it was necessary for me to sell several shares per year in order to cover the checks that
you
insisted on
writing. Who gave you the right to do that?
You did, Mr. Graham.
I did not.
Yes, you did. See, 15 years ago, when you told me that you wished to live on $200,000, despite the fact that the income from your trust fund was only $90,000, and that I...
That is beside the point. This check must be paid. Do you realize that this check is bounced, Mr. Beckett? I mean bounced, as though I were some indigent...
Yes, I know the check is bounced. It is not the first check that you've had bounced, Mr. Graham. I personally have covered 3 overdrafts of yours to the extent... I'd like to show you this check of $550. This is of my own money, not the firm's money, but that is not a policy that I wish to continue in the future.
Who gave you the right to do that?
Well, you did, Mr. Graham.
You mean to say that I am now in the position of owing you $550?
No. Don't. Please don't think of it as a loan, Mr. Graham. I have no more hope of receiving it than you ever have of scraping it up.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Beckett. And may I say that if you expected even the smallest amount of gratitude, you have wasted $550 of the excessive fee I pay you for the tiny services you render.
Mr. Graham, I would like to explain something to you. I have given you $550 of my own money for only one reason. Disliking you as intensely as I do, I wanted to be absolutely certain that when I looked back upon your financial downfall, I could absolve myself completely of any responsibility for it. And $550 is a relatively small price to pay for the knowledge that I've had nothing to do whatsoever with your financial downfall. You have brought yourself to penury entirely on your own.
I don't suppose you'd care to give me an additional $6,000 and insure yourself against guilt permanently.
You're perfect.
Thank you very much, Mr. Beckett.
I mean, I was crying. I'm sitting here alone in the middle of the afternoon watching this movie, just like crying from laughing so hard. I had to like keep rewinding and, you know, just pause it and watch again. But there are a few moments throughout that the scene where the two of them first meet and she's holding her cup and it's just tilting. It just...
She's about to drop that teacup. Perfect.
Madeline, would you get Miss Lowell another cup of tea, please?
Terribly sorry.
That's all right, dear. Really, it couldn't matter less. It's nothing. It's nothing. It's just an old rug.
I can just
squish that out, and then just dab it. Here, I'll take it. Just dab it, and blot it. Here, I'll take the blood. Here.
Oh, be careful.
You got it. There we go. Now.
Incredibly clumsy woman, isn't she? No wonder she doesn't ride.
Forgive me, Mama. Where am I? Excuse me.
One
couple. We have one couple. Excuse me. Oh!
Henrietta, is this some kind of joke? Because if it is, I do not find it amusing. If your nerves aren't steady enough to hold a cup and saucer in your hand, then you shouldn't be drinking tea.
I would like to.
Once, yes, but twice in a row.
It's too much.
Madam. There you are, madam. Take your damn carpet to the cleaners and send the bill to me. Here you are. Come, Miss Laurel, I'm taking you home. Take your bag.
You son of a bitch.
You dare call me a son of a bitch? Madam, I have seen many examples of perversion in my time, but your erotic obsession with your carpet is probably the most grotesque and certainly the most boring I have ever encountered. You're more to be scorned than pitied. Good day, Mrs. Cunliffe.
The sequences are so just beautifully crafted with this humor that is you know, on the surface it's very, very bold, you know, very broad, but it's, at the same time, I mean, they hold it so well, you know, without the characters on the screen or anything kind of exploding, you know what I mean? It was you're reacting to the, kind of the anticipation of what's coming, and it's not a common thing for humor, I don't think, because oftentimes it's more about it, like, here's a joke, here's a punchline, but it works so well with these two just doing just really, really good work here. And the story itself too, I mean, in addition to being just a very, very funny movie, like as you mentioned, just the idea that as light and like kind of goofy as the movie is and proceeds to be, to then like just casually mention that he's, you know, well, I'll just knock her off, and that's going to be like his plan. It adds in this just glorious darkness to it that I also loved. And I mean, you can make the argument that it kind of returns a bit too easily towards the end, but I think if you go through, I ended up rewatching it again like once or twice, like within the next like week after first seeing it, and it's you can make the argument about that, but I think that it sets the stage well, that he has his occasional pauses, and he's just utter brilliance in this movie.
Yeah, I have really come to appreciate Matthau in the last 10 to 15 years in a way that I never could have conceived possible when I was younger. I was just, Matthau was that old guy in The Odd Couple, you know, and he just didn't have the capacity to be as funny and as clever as he is in this movie and so many others, you know. I don't know. But I gotta say, Elaine May, for me, one of my favorite filmmakers, not just female filmmakers, but one of my favorite filmmakers based on this movie and The Heartbreak Kid alone. And then she's done some other stuff I like as well, but I think her sense of tone, especially between this movie and Heartbreak, is so incredible, because like you said, it's just so, it could be just straight broad, but there's more to it than that. And I got to give some credit, I would think, to her time with Mike Nichols when Nichols and May were, you know, a duo and everything like that.
May I help you?
I'd like to see a refrigerator.
Here's one now, sir. General Electric. Hello, darling.
Harry, I've come to say goodbye.
It is what
you're
saying.
Not now, Harry. Tell me about the refrigerator. I've come to have Penny and Binky.
Well, there's no defrosting.
Oh, I'll kick it.
Not even this roll-out freezer. Yes. You see, General Electric has a new system called Frost Guard, so frost never forms. It is.
What's this?
Freeze and store. See, the ice cubes flip right out of their trays.
Incessantly?
Only when you want them to, darling.
Tell me about the shelves.
The shelves?
They seem to move.
They swing out, all three of them.
Would you swing one out for me? Just one.
They also move up and down.
I rather thought they would.
Tall hams fit. Do you remember how you used to cut hams in half? How we laughed. Those funny little half-cut hams.
We did have fun, didn't we?
Phyllis, why?
A freezer. Tell me about it.
There's no messy frost.
Oh, yes, frost guard.
Yes, packages won't stick together.
Phyllis, why are you doing this to us?
Because, Harry, because I must. Because our worlds are separate, Harry. I can't ask you to give up all this to become the son-in-law of a Viscount.
Refrigerators are my life, Phyllis.
I know that, darling. Don't you see? I've always known that.
Goodbye, Phyllis.
Harry, would you send me one of each? And whenever a shelf swings out, I'll think of you.
And when they move up and down, I'll think of you.
And whenever I see a tall hand standing proud and uncut.
I wish I could have given you more, Phyllis. But at least you won't have to defrost ever again. At least I've given you that.
Goodbye, Harry. Come again, Fanny.
Goodbye, Phyllis.
They're very funny then, so I'm sure that she was already refined and intelligent, but I think the two of them working together probably helped her find her tonal balance in filmmaking, but you know, that's just my guess.
If only she didn't make Ishtar and then see herself get banished to the nether regions of directing.
Yeah, it's a bummer because I like Ishtar. And in retrospect, I think if you go back to Ishtar, I think it's really hard to be so hard on that movie. It was just so the spotlight at the time.
I think it's fine. I mean, it's definitely, it's been forever since I watched it again, but it's an okay movie. It definitely is not something that I would have expected to get any kind of, like slam back like it did. And especially to the point of, again, keeping her basically away from directing for the next several years.
Really sad, especially when you look at these movies she did in the 70s and then Mikey and Nikki on top of that, which is like basically like a Cassavetes movie, which is really great. So yeah, I'm bummed about, you know, her place in film history, but I'm glad that this Blu-ray came out because at least you get deluxe presentation, including, I need glasses, I think. Audio commentary by film scholar Maya Montez. Smuckler. Wow, I can't read shit. The cutting room floor, editing a new leaf.
She interview, must be so proud.
interview with a new leaf assistant editor, Angela Coro. This is real professional podcasting. You're here, right here. This is heavy duty. Women in Hollywood, a tragedy of comic proportions with director Amy Heckerling. I actually really like that. I thought that was really neat. And then an essay by editor and film programmer Alexander Heffler Nicholas. Yeah, this is a cool, I don't know. This is I did. I put up my discs of the year release or episode, and this is definitely one of my favorite releases of the entire year. I don't know how you felt about it overall, but
yeah, I think it's a great home video release. I think it's just a tremendous movie. Obviously, we've already covered that. I do think that, like you mentioned at the beginning here, I was kind of sad when Olive seemed to have stopped their signature line because it had just started. And it had already, only one of them to me didn't really move me, which is Orson Welles' Macbeth that they put out. But that's just because it didn't really, the movie itself doesn't really work for me. But what did work is that the selection of titles that they were putting out, they seemed to be kind of heavy on Western for a little bit, but they were Westerns that were unfamiliar to me, like Johnny Guitar, I'd never seen before.
Oh, it's such a good disc.
And, yeah, it just is an amazing movie and a great disc. They put out Handy Calder, which is a good movie, but a great disc. They had High Noon. So, I mean, I was really happy with what they were doing. And so I was kind of sad when they first stopped, but I'm glad to see him back again with what they've been putting out recently.
Yeah, I hope it continues, you know, based on this. Let's move on to the next one just because I don't want to take too much time here. But the next one is called Letter from an Unknown Woman. And this is a Max Ophuls film from 1948.
By the time you read this letter, I may be dead. I have so much to tell you and perhaps very little time. Will I ever send it? I don't know. I must find the strength to write now before it's too late. And as I write, it may become clear that what happened to us had its own reason beyond our poor understanding. If this reaches you, you will know how I became yours when you didn't know who I was.
I've seen you somewhere. I know. I followed you upstairs and watched you in your box. Is there any place we could have met that I might have seen you? At one of my concerts. It must have been some time ago.
If this letter reaches you, believe this, that I love you now as I've always loved you. My life can be measured by the moments I've had with you. If only you could have shared those moments.
I really like this movie a lot, although I have some issues with it, because you know what's funny for me is, and I don't know if you do this, but when I watch a certain kind of movie and I like it, I think about how my wife would react to it, and that can really throw me off, because my wife has very little sympathy for characters that do things like cheating on their spouses, or in this woman's case, kind of abandoning her child. But I mean, I don't know. I should lay the backstory first. I mean, the idea of this story is that Joan Fontaine plays this woman who becomes obsessed with a piano playing prodigy type fella played by Louis Jourdan, who lives in her apartment building. And she becomes so obsessed with him that she just sort of stalks him all the time. And even when her mother moves her away from, you know, Vienna where they're living, she finds a way back to see him and ends up having an evening with him, and they end up having a child, and that becomes a whole thing. But the lengths that she goes to continue to see this man who is kind of a shit, to say the least, is pretty heartbreaking. But yeah, watching it this time, I was thinking, God, what would my wife think of this? I think she'd have some problems with this character. What did you think of it?
I do the same thing, and then I wonder like what your wife would think of a movie when I'm watching it. At least I did until I got the restraining order. But with this one, I mean, here's the thing. I'm a huge Joan Fontaine fan. She was my introduction into black and white movies, which is maybe an odd way for somebody to get into black and white movies. But I had caught Suspicion with her and Cary Grant.
Nice.
And loved it. But I kind of when I saw it, this is like ages and ages ago, and I just fell in love with her. And so I reached a point where I was like just, you know, seeking out every possible one of her films I could find, you know, going to like, you know, video stores. This is like back in the Blockbuster days. So I was like, you know, just scrounging through, trying to find lists of the various titles and various appearances she made in movies. I read her autobiography. a friend of mine, perhaps in recognition of my growing obsession, got me like an 8x10 photo of her in this nice frame and gave it to me.
Nice.
So I was and still am. I mean, I still think she's, you know, terrific. Her private story is heartbreaking in its own way. But she also was just kind of a fascinating person to me, I think. But performance-wise, I think she's also has pretty much always been on the money, either with just a liveliness or kind of like a sadness kind of just sitting there beneath the surface. Specifically to this movie, I think it speaks to the latter one. I'm a huge, again, fan of movies that are not straight downers, but movies that kind of give you these characters or character that you're pulling for, you're caring for. And as much as I love happy endings and, you know, triumphs, I even more so love once in a while to see a movie that just says, nope, it's not going to work out, and everybody suffers. Yeah. And this is one of those movies that does that without being like a tragedy in the sense of like, you know, people getting killed or like that kind of thing. It's a tragedy of the heart. And to see what she goes to, the length she goes to, not just to kind of like be with him, but also to kind of fool herself into thinking that there's something, you know, more there. Well, at the same time, having this kind of a pride, you know, that she hasn't actually had to, like, you know, follow through and commit and rely on this person. And so it works well. I mean, the framing device is, you know, him sitting there reading this letter while he's in the middle of his own little troubles and he needs to get out of town. But instead, he's, you know, just enraptured by this letter as we are, you know, watching it come to life. And what it builds to is his own recognition of his own life and what he's accomplished, but also what he's missed because of what he's been focused on. And so she's, you know, the main story here. But he, as kind of the one that we're experiencing it with, is much of a tragedy, I think. But and it's also just like a beautifully shot movie. I mean, just everything about it is a very, very lush, sad, but beautiful.
Yeah, no, Ophuls is a big proponent of moving the camera, and he does it really well in the movie. But yeah, just his shot selection is great. I mean, he's one of those classy directors, really, really knows his craft. But yeah, Jourdan's performance was something I hadn't thought about as much until this time. Because, I mean, yeah, it's mostly him reading the letter and then sort of little bits of him reacting to her. They have one scene that I love and that stands out for the entire movie, and that is like their date. They have kind of a date where they go to this place that it basically has like the equivalent of a train car, and they have these backgrounds that they'll cycle past the windows so you feel like you're going on a trip, and you can tell them where you want to go, and they put up the certain background.
We're in Venice.
Yes, we've arrived. Now, where would you like to go next? France? England? Russia?
Switzerland.
Switzerland. Excuse me a moment while I talk with the engineer.
You and the lady, are you enjoying the trip?
Very much. We've decided on Switzerland. Switzerland. There you are. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Switzerland.
Switzerland. Switzerland.
We're looking down at the flying fish. Then what? Aren't you going to finish the trip?
Well, there weren't any trips. Do you mind? You see, my father had a friend in a travel bureau. My father worked across the street. He was an assistant superintendent of the municipal waterworks. And he used to bring folders home with him with pictures in them. We have stacks of them. And in the evening, he'd put on his traveling coat. That's what he called it. Of course, I was very young. And he would say, where should we go this evening? And I would say, Veracruz, because it's a beautiful name. And then he would say, it's summer there. You don't want to roast like a coffee bean, do you?
So you never did get there?
No, it was just like our trip to the land of the midnight sun.
What stopped you this time?
The weather. I thought of India, but then Father remembered that it was the rainy season.
Your father was an expert on climates.
My mother used to say that he knew what the weather was everywhere except home. What mountain was that?
That's the Matterhorn.
Have you climbed it?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, when you climb up a mountain, what then?
But you come down again.
That's a really good scene. That's a scene that somebody should steal if they haven't, because that's really good. But the rest of it, there's not a lot of Jordan, except that he's kind of a douchey guy. And by the end, he doesn't have a lot of time, but I think he's still able to portray some humanity that is kind of tricky to pull off in a short amount of time.
Yeah, I think he recognizes, because all the flashback scenes, basically what he's reading are all flashbacks essentially. He is kind of, you know, aloof and uncaring and, you know, focused on his own just, you know, gallivanting ways. And so it's only the present time, you know, basically him reading it and then at the end of the movie where we kind of see kind of the cost of what that life has, you know, weighed upon him. I mean, how he's holding it. And he's not as, you know, as light-footed as he was in those flashbacks, which were also from her perspective. But instead, he's a man who, again, is burdened by the choices he's made. Some he was completely even, you know, unaware of, but now that he's aware, it kind of forces his hand towards his present situation. So, yeah, I think it just works really well. I mean, he's a jerk in those flashbacks, but I think that's kind of the point of what he was.
Also kind of charming. You see why she kind of drawn to him, you know? So, yeah, it's a really good performance, and she's fantastic. I'm with you. That's a good way to enter into old films is through Joan Fontaine. She did a lot of great stuff. Anyway, that's another great one from this whole.
Can you read the extras to us again?
I can read the extras, but I pulled it up on the website, so I can read much better. Audio commentary by Max Ophuls expert Lutz Bach. Oh fuck. Lutz Bacher, A Deal Made in a Turkish Bath. Interview with Oscar-winning documentarian Marcel Ophuls. An Independent Woman, Changing Sensibilities in Post-War Hollywood, interview with Professor Dana Polin, and Ophuls Ask, The Look of Letter from an Unknown Woman with cinematographers Ben Kalsuki and Sean Price Williams. Oh, and Letter from an Unknown Woman, Passions Triumph, visual essay by scholar Tag Gallagher, with an essay by critic Molly Haskell. Yeah, this is another, I mean, this is like Criterion-level stuff right here, and this is a movie that could easily have come out from Criterion. In fact, I think they put it out on Laserdisc. So Olive kind of stealing their thunder here.
Well, that's what I'm liking too, because the regular Olive line, I mean, they've put out some good titles, and I'm happy to see their selections because they're nice each month, because usually pretty varied. But they are, for the most part, kind of devoid of any kind of extras or even extra effort put into the release as far as, like, you know, new scans or any of that. So this whole line has been really impressive so far.
Yeah, I should mention that most of this stuff is mastered in 4K, like, you know, redone from their original Blu-ray releases, so that's pretty cool. So next up, we have two Cary Grant comedies. We'll start with Operation Petticoat from 1959.
First came the lieutenant, an admiral's aide who had never been to sea, and was he a Lulu?
Now you've got exactly 3 minutes to get off your fat mattress and get dressed and report to Mr. Watson.
Yes, sir.
And then came the petticoats, five nurses who just had to be squeezed in.
Now, you being women and the crew being men...
Captain, we're well acquainted with the facts of life.
And from that moment, the maneuvering and the misadventures made the entire South Pacific just quiver with togetherness.
What's going on in there?
Oh, a raffle, sir. They're drawing for the women.
They're drawing for the women?
A girl just doesn't get into any man's pajamas.
If the man's not in them, what's the harm?
From bumbling females to blooming romance, no commander ever faced such hilarious problems.
Get them off the boat! Those two women are pregnant! Look, look!
Isn't it lucky for us, sir, we have the nurses aboard?
I'm running a submarine, not a maternity ward!
A tanker? Oh, she's a beaut.
Captain, it's time for your vitamin pill.
Lieutenant, get below. Damn it, get below! We sunk a truck.
Now this one, I had seen this years ago, and all that I remembered was the stuff with the women's bras, and I don't know what that says about me.
What does your wife think about that?
I did not bring that up to my wife. She has not seen this movie. This is an interesting one, and I had forgotten completely that Blake Edwards directed this movie.
Yep.
Totally, when that came up, I was like, what? Wait a minute. But this is a fun little, you know, goofy naval comedy about, with some heart to it, you know, about basically it opens with Cary Grant coming out to this submarine and they're about to put it into mothballs. They're about to, you know, totally sink it or whatever they do to dead submarines in the Navy. And he opens up his like little captain's log and he has this long flashback about the like inaugural voyage of the sub and all the wacky characters that were involved and how, you know, the sub was basically, before it was even ready to come out of the port that it was in, it was like bombed and shot up by an ambush, and so it's like already on like not its last leg, but like not in great shape, and it has to sort of limp its way across the ocean to get to a place to be repaired. And so there's a lot of interesting folks that are part of the ragtag crew, including Tony Curtis, who's like a country clubber kind of, you know, non-working kind of dude.
Have you ever been in a submarine before, Mr. Holden?
No, sir.
We could use a good torpedo and gunnery officer. Any experience along those lines?
Guns? I'm afraid not, sir, no.
How about navigation?
Terribly sorry.
Communications?
Wish I could help you out, sir.
Tell me, before you became an admiral's aide, what did you do in the Navy, Mr. Holden?
Well, sir, I was primarily an idea man.
I see, wow. Tell me, what does an idea man do?
Well, sir, I coordinated the Navy Day Parade in Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
And then I was the special liaison officer for the 11th Naval District.
Liaison to what?
Hollywood. I coordinated the designing of enlistment posters.
Ah. Uh-huh.
Then from there, I was transferred to Fleet Headquarters, Honolulu.
Oh. Is that where they gave you sea duty?
No, sir, I was the recreation officer at the Royal Arms Hotel.
Just for my information, Mr. Holden, what does an idea man do in a hotel?
Well, you see, sir, the Navy took over the hotel for officers' training, and I saw that entertainment was provided.
Have you ever been to sea?
Yes, sir, destroyer duty.
How did you find time for it?
It was a mistake, sir. But a week after I left Honolulu, they got it straightened out.
Who, the Admiral or the Admiral's wife? She must be awfully upset with you stranded out here. That'll probably cost her the Roomba Championship this year. Holy
who ends up being of great help to them in terms of getting parts for the sub so they can actually get away from the base where they're at to get fixed up. But how do you feel about this Blake Edwards comedy?
I love it. Blake Edwards, I had remembered that he had directed it. He's got a ton of movies though that I had no recollection that were his, but this one I was aware of. But I love it. I mean, it's to me, it's this is for me his prime Cary Grant, where he's just so on fire with his expressions, with his reactions, like that. He just is a master. And Tony Curtis does a great job as well. But I mean, everybody in here has got a great supporting cast as well. But the movie is just funny. It's just firing on all cylinders from beginning to end. I think it's just very, very funny, whether it be, you know, in the dialogue or in the actual, just again, the reactions, the interactions between the cast and the crew, or I mean, between the cast members. I'm a huge, huge fan of it. I think it's one of those ones where it's, I'd seen it ages and ages ago, and this was a rewatch after probably about maybe about 12 years or so. But it was every bit as funny, and I was still laughing aloud. I was still enjoying it very, very much. So, it's one of the ones that I think definitely lasts and continues to be just a great film. I know they remade it. Didn't they remake it?
I think so. Yeah.
I never watched the remake, but
no, me neither. You were talking about the cast. I mean, so you've got your Cary Grant and Tony Curtis. And then you've got Gene Evans, and you've got Dick Sargent from Bewitched. You've got Gavin McLeod from Love Boat.
Mary Tyler Moore, yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like there's even a few more people that I'm not thinking of. Marion Ross from Happy Days. Yeah, it's a really solid cast. And something about the Tony Curtis and Cary Grant, although, did Cary Grant do a Billy Wilder movie? I feel like he did, and I'm not thinking of it right now. But it feels like a Billy Wilder comedy, but broader. But it may be just because of Tony Curtis and my association with Some Like It Hot or something.
Yeah, Curtis, I mean, he has that sensibility about him, and which is why I'm not always the biggest fan of his work.
Me neither.
I mean, it really comes down to the film he's in and the writing, obviously. But I mean, he can go, he pretty much always, to my mind, always kind of goes a bit too big. But here, I think that, one, it works really well to fit the character for what this person is. He's someone who basically, you know, can get anything because, you know, whether it be through his mouth or through his creativity or whatever, he can get you whatever you want. And part of that is that he's always made sure his own experience has been, you know, top notch, you know, only the best of everything, even though he's part of the military. And I think, but it balances so well with Cary Grant, who again is incredibly funny in his own right, but he's able to kind of, even as he's making us laugh, he's able to maintain a sense of authority, kind of a fatherly sense of authority. And that plays into also, I think, his reaction towards the women who come on board. I mean, this whole thing about the women shouldn't be on the sub, you know, people have like their superstition about it. He's kind of, you know, too smart to let that be a problem. But instead, he is flummoxed by, you know, the girl in the shower and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I mean, he's a bit, you know, put off his perch because of it all. And it just plays so well into the humor. And the two of them end up working really well together because of these two competing styles, I think.
Yeah. Cary Grant can play, I mean, if you watch like Bringing Up Baby and some of the early stuff, he can play it really big too, but he's really pulled back in this, in that, like you say, authoritative way. And it really, like you had mentioned, sort of balances out between him and Curtis, and they really play off each other well. They kind of have like a gentle distaste for each other, but more, oh man, it's hard to, it's just like, I'm going to put you through your paces and you're going to either show me that you are part of this team, or, you know, I'm going to make you basically want to quit.
Yeah. They both approach each other in the beginning as kind of like, well, I just have to put up with this person for, you know, however long. And then it's like, that's the character dynamic. But over the course of the movie, which is like 2 hours or something, but it flies by.
It doesn't feel like 2 hours.
Not at all. But over the course of the movie, you can see them, obviously, you know, the begrudging respect is building, you know, as obviously the story goes along and as it takes its various turns into more serious. I mean, it's still very funny, but, you know, when they start getting into like, you know, battle and stuff like that. But it builds towards that ending, which is, even though it came first, it always reminded me also of it's very similar ending wise to The Final Countdown, that old Kirk Douglas Martin Sheen movie.
Oh wow, yeah, the time travel one.
Yeah, because that one also, it starts and they go out to sea, and at the end they come back, and in both of them they come back and someone gets off the ship, and you know, this person shows up in the car who was part of that story we just saw.
Oh, wow. I forgot about that.
Final Countdown is obviously time travel, but here it's a matter of just jumping back because he's reading a journal. But either way, it always reminds me of it. It would make for a nice double feature.
Yeah, no, it would be very interesting now that I think about it. Blake Edwards, definitely a man of his time, I would say, you know, in both his view of other races and his view of women. Although this movie isn't totally sexist, it definitely, it, you know, it shows the signs of somebody who is not necessarily part of the Me Too movement or anything like that. You know?
I think he does. Like, I mean, he kind of like later on, especially later on in his career, he started making more kind of over the top sex comedies. What was it, like 10 or like Skin Deep? But I mean, but I think
I love Skin Deep, by the way.
That with the lightsaber fight.
Yeah, that is quite memorable.
But with this one though, I think that even though it's the comedy of the time, a lot of it's playing off of, you know, kind of various sexist beliefs and the interactions between the sexes on the ship. I think the script, and he does a good job, again, balancing it, that these women who are on board, they're not the bimbos that some of these guys maybe think they are. They're all competent. I mean, yeah, they end up, you know, with the pink and all that, but they're competent people.
Yeah.
You know, with the one woman in the engineering room, I mean, they're competent at their jobs. They're great. They're fine. There's no problem with them. They just happen to be, you know, sailors with curves, and so it throws everybody off. But anyway, I think it does a good job of not being too over the top. Like, you know, check out these dames. It's more a matter of like the guys think that, and then again, just like with Tony Curtis and Cary Grant's characters, the guys in the ship slowly come around to accepting and saying, you know what, this is actually okay and it's going to work.
Yeah, you may be right. Maybe this is one of the more progressive things he did in terms of that, because I always kind of feel like he's coming at female characters like women, am I right? You know, kind of. and that feels like it's part of this movie, but ultimately you're right. They do come off as more whole characters and actual people who have agency and are good at what they do. So
yeah, I think
fair.
So.
That's fair. All right, so I'll read my extras here. This has got an audio commentary. This has got an audio commentary by Adrian Martin. Something called That's What Everybody Says About Me with Jennifer Edwards and actress Leslie Ann Warren. The Brave Crew of the Petticoat with actors Gavin McLeod and Marion Ross. The Captain and His Double, Cary Grant's Struggles of the Self with Mark Elliott, author of Cary Grant, a biography.
That's actually a pretty good featurette if you're interested in Cary Grant's career, but also so, you know, I don't know how I'm assuming that it's accurate. So I mean, his career, but also his desires for where he wants his career to go. This guy seems to be pretty knowledgeable and knows and shares a lot of information as far as why Grant made the choices he made, as far as what goals he was after.
That's cool. I didn't get a chance to check that out yet, so I'm going to check that out soon. There's a couple more things, but that's mostly it. Last one on the pile here is something called Father Goose from 1964, also starring Cary Grant.
Is that anyone we know?
Well, it looks... Oh, it can't be.
Oh, it's Cary Grant.
What's he supposed to be?
The rude, foul-mouthed, drunken, filthy beast.
I'm Big Bad Wolf, your Mother Goose.
Mother Goose?
I thought he was Father Goose.
Father Goose, starring Cary Grant and Leslie Caron, shacked up on a Pacific island with seven little castaways. He was gracious, gallant, hospitable, and considerate.
We could all do with some food.
And always a gentleman.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go to bed.
She was thoughtful, gentle, tolerant.
I asked you to stop drinking, but you wouldn't.
Where is it?
The children were helpful and loving. And the adults brought out the best in each other.
Maybe if you stop straightening pictures and let men wear their own pants, maybe they'd be able to touch you without asking permesso.
Cary Grant. Leslie Caron.
Is it morning already?
In Father Goose. Co-starring Trevor Howard.
Good heavens, he's killed her.
And the dear little girls you'll adore.
And this one is a little different Cary Grant, but it's still World War II era stuff. And it's basically, he's this hermit who has sort of isolated himself on this little island. And he ends up with a whole bunch of young people and a teacher stranded on the island with him, and they're all women. So again, sort of a Cary Grant stuck with all women kind of theme continued into this movie. And one of the main school teacher is played by Leslie Caron, so that's interesting. How do you come down on this one?
I'm kind of torn. I think that Grant is fantastic, and I think the early scenes where he's kind of bouncing off Trevor Howard as far as, again, trying to get what he wants, because he's trying to skate through the war kind of unencumbered, but also getting things from people. And so the trade-off he ends up with here is him getting stuck on this island that he's supposed to kind of like, you know, keep an eye on and then notify the military of, like, you know, Japanese forces nearby and stuff like that. And I think all those scenes work really well. Him kind of setting up his place in the island and kind of like, you know, realizing what he's in for, I think all work well. For me, it kind of takes a downturn once Leslie Caron and the kids show up. I just don't, and it's nothing reflective of them. I just am not a huge fan of storylines and films where so much of the humor is kind of based on, well, look at these obnoxious kids, but also our main character is being, you know, flustered by their presence, and isn't that crazy? It just does nothing for me. I just, it loses, the humor just like evaporates. And instead I'm just feeling like, Jesus, you know, slap that person, get them out of there. Tell them to shut up. Tell them to stop touching your shit. It just is, to me, it's so frustrating. And so this movie, a huge chunk of it is obviously that's the plot. And so, and people love it. So, I mean, I know I'm in the minority here, but for me, it's just a huge turnoff. And it just really drops the film quality for me.
That's fair. You know, that's a fair critique. I personally have a thing where I love to see Cary Grant annoyed.
So I like seeing him annoyed by responsible adults.
But know, kids, not so much.
Not so much kids, because I think that, and this isn't just the case here, but in movies in general, when it comes down to it being a kid, there's an understandable lighter touch when it comes to the kids. And so the kids get to be super fucking annoying. But like, where if it was like an annoying adult, there's all kinds of stuff you can do to kind of shut them down or to kind of get them back. But with these little kids, it's meant to be like, oh, they're precocious and obnoxious. And isn't that fun? And you know, your character, in this case, Cary Grant, you know, can't do a damn thing about it other than kind of like huff and puff and, you know, walk away. And it just is, it's not my scene.
So you're saying you hate children is really the bottom line.
Well, I like to be able to walk away from kids. And in these movies, these characters, they don't. They're kind of stuck with it. And it's just like,
No, I'm with you, dude. I understand. You know what's funny is that these movies kind of flip-flopped, because I had remembered not liking Operation Petticoat as much as I did, and I'd remembered liking Father Goose more. And I still like Father Goose quite a bit, but Operation Petticoat came out head and shoulders above this one, and I didn't remember that being the case. But still a really interesting Cary Grant performance, and for those that like him, I feel like you should see it, because it's definitely...
Oh, yeah, and again, I don't like it really much at all, and you like it but don't love it. But I think that even so, both of us are still kind of in the minority. I mean, it's a beloved film, obviously.
Yeah, so, I remember reading... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so if you're going to see it, I mean, this is a great way to catch it, because again, it's another, you know, well-loaded, you know, beautiful picture, great job by Olive. It's just not for me.
That's fair. Those features you speak of are an audio commentary with film historian David Del Valle, Unfinished Business, Cary Grant's Search for Fatherhood and His Oscar with Mark Elliott, that same guy who did the...
It's the same guy, and it's kind of a continuation of the same talk, so it's got to kind of split it across the two discs.
That's cool. Something called My Father, internet pioneer Ted Nelson discusses director Ralph Nelson, who is actually a really interesting director and who did some really cool movies that I feel like a lot of people don't talk about too much. There's one called Soldier in the Rain that he did with, Blake Edwards wrote the screenplay, but it's got Steve McQueen and Jackie Gleason in it. It's a really interesting... Anyway, he's a cool director that nobody talks about anymore. So that was...
I actually just watched one of his movies last night.
What'd you watch?
The Will Be Conspiracy.
Oh, nice! I just got that.
Yeah, and I think it's great. It's not a movie I was aware of before, but it's a really, really solid movie.
If you ever get a chance, he did a movie called The Wrath of God with Robert Mitchum that I think is pretty badass, where Mitchum plays a gun-toting faux priest. Nice. I think you get a kick out of it. So anyway, let me see here. I think that's about it for these features on the Father Goose Blu-ray. And that's about it for this episode. I do appreciate, Rob, you coming on to talk about Olive Film Signature Discs. I hope we get some more in the near future, and maybe we can discuss those as well.
That would be nice. I had kind of hemmed and hawed when you first asked me if I should come back again. But then I thought, well, what does his wife think I should do? And The answer was obvious.
So. Oh boy, I set up a lifetime running joke. I like it. All right, well, thank you, Rob. I have this feeling you might be back again soon for another episode. So
we'll see. We'll hear. I don't know how that works.
Yes.
This is a podcast.
This is a podcast. It's an audio format. But don't worry. All that stuff you've been doing in terms of your performance visually, I'm sure people will catch it.
So I've had this webcam on for nothing.
That's for my enjoyment.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you, sir. And everybody have a lovely and Blu-ray filled week. And I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you.